This is Sam from the Masculine Journey podcast, and our goal with the podcast is help you to try to find your way in this difficult world. Your Chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
He's spoken to hundreds of thousands of people across the country, but he didn't start out as a public speaker on demand, taking calls and inquiries. And he's written books, but he didn't start out as an author. He started out as a humble local undertaker, fourth generation undertaker. He's written a book called View from a Hearse. His name is Bruce Goddard. He's our special guest today, back by popular demand. And because we didn't get to talk about your second book, Bruce, The Legacy of Ulan Brown. But man, thanks for coming back and joining us. You're one of those people I think I could just talk to all day. We need to get in a truck and we need to drive all the way to California.
I
think
we'd
still be talking when we got there. What do you think?
I agree, man. I love it. No doubt.
Well, the power of telling stories. Jesus told parables. You know, there's a whole lot of cool storytelling. What is it about a story that draws people in? And then you suddenly get them the Word of God. You've got their attention. You've connected emotionally. That's something that God's gifted you to do, I guess, huh?
I think that's right. I mean, I'm a storyteller, and the stories, 90% of them are stories that happened to me that impacted me. And I think I look for life lessons in people. I look for life lessons and stories as they develop in my life. And then I quickly, when they happen, I write about them and so that I won't forget it. And then I have opportunities to tell the stories, but yeah, storytelling, and Jesus did it. Yeah. He told a lot of stories, and you get lessons that sometimes I learn lessons from my stories that I didn't learn when I first told it. You know,
I
understand something new, and that's kind of the way it was with the parables that Jesus told.
And your second book gets into that even more. Now, your first book, goodness gracious, I think I read them backwards, but then somehow I said, I'm going to just take a look. I was halfway through your second book, which looked newer and it's hardback and all that. So then I thought, you know what, this is a younger Bruce Goddard, and this is his first book, A View from a Hearse. So I picked it up just to kind of dab a little bit. Next thing you know, I can't put it down. I mean, and the times are passing. I got to run upstairs and get the youngsters to bed, and I'm way behind on anything I was supposed to be doing. I hadn't even checked my social media because I was reading your book, View from a Hearse. So tell us how the first book came about, and then tell us how the second book came about, and tell us a little bit about the legacy of Ulan Brown.
The first book came about because I was speaking, and I backed into that. I was asked to speak to a ministerial association Christmas banquet in our county. I was wondering what in the world I'm going to talk about. And I began to tell these funny stories, and most of them on the preachers that I knew very well sitting in the audience. And I remember even the people waiting on the tables that night were standing up and they were laughing, and it was a great time. It was great to see a bunch of preachers laugh, and it was like empowering to me. So I began to get other speaking engagements. I began to start sharing my faith a little bit, started selling a serious part at the end. And then it exploded. I couldn't even do the speaking engagements. And then everywhere I went, people would say, you should write a book. You should write a book. And so finally I did. It didn't take me long to write that book. I mean, I literally wrote and expanded a version of what I was talking about. And in the book, there's four basic premises. Number one, the world ain't going to stop when you die. The second is, we need to lighten up. The third is, in this world, you're going to have trouble. I don't care who you are, what you do for a living. I don't care if you're a Christian or non-Christian. You're going to have trouble in this world. And the fourth point is the only investment you make in this life that will be here after you're dead and gone and some crazy undertaker like me buries you or cremates you, the only thing that's going to be left are the investments you made in people. And so that's the premise of what I began to talk. So that's how the book came around. I wrote it based on what I was talking about. I did it literally on my laptop while watching TV almost. It was pretty easy to write.
I love it.
It's easy reading.
Well, it is easy reading, and it's you know, you're hearing, you know, light stories like when they accidentally mixed up, you know, Golden Bells with Jingle Bells in a Southern church, and to the aghast of the family and the whole funeral party, and then how you and your team contained your laughter. I don't know. But then you got serious stuff. You write letters to your dad who's in heaven. just how you're thinking about him. And I just am like, wow. Just, you know, but you didn't miss a beat from View from a Hearse to the next book, Legacy of Ulan Brown. Tell us, who is Ulan Brown? This guy, seems like maybe some youngsters were making fun of this guy who kept wrecking his bike and spilling his papers everywhere.
Yeah, so Ulan had a muscular disease, and he lived in our little town of Reynolds, Georgia, which is in middle Georgia, halfway between Macon and Columbus, Georgia. And he was 15 years older than me. I used to say that, and then I really went to his grave, and he is 15. You can find his grave on findagrave.com, because I made sure it was on there. And but he's almost exactly 15 years older than me, but he was he delivered grit papers on his bicycle. And a lot of people don't know what that is, but people from the South will, especially my age. They were a nickel a piece or something, a lot of ads, but he delivered them on his bicycle. And if you saw him riding his bicycle, you would think he was drunk because of his muscular situation. And if you saw him walking, he staggered. And the problem is, my mental picture of Ulan was he was always in the ditch, and his grid papers were always strewn out all over the road, and he was always gathering his papers back up so he could get them in the basket and get on down the road. I see him flat-footed, fanny on the ground, gathering his papers back up. That's the mental picture. So we made fun of Ulan. Me and my buddies, we would come up behind him on our bikes, and we would boo him, and he'd look, and he'd wreck. We would laugh, and we'd go on down the road. We'd have spend-the-night parties sometimes, and you know how you do when you're kids, and somebody say, Ulan's looking in the window. Ulan has a distorted face. I mean, he almost looked like a monster as a kid. And he said, Ulan's looking in the window. He wasn't, but we would say that. Everybody would run and hide. And one day, I don't know, I was 11 or 12 years old. I'm up at this little store. The man owned it, cooked hamburgers, had this little counter. And I'm eating the hamburger. I had my bicycle on the sidewalk, and Ulan walks in. I didn't have my buddies with me. And Ulan came and sat down next to me, and I was thinking, I need to get out of here. This guy's going to jerk my head off, because he probably knew I'd been making fun of him, and I saw him as a monster, and I was trying to get up and to leave. Before I could do that, he called me by name. He knew my dad's name. He knew my mom's name. He knew my two brothers' name, my sister's name. He knew what was going on in our lives. And I remember as a kid how impacted I was. I was thinking, this is a normal human being. And whatever I thought about Ulan Brown, I was wrong. And that day, a couple of things happened. I left there, and I got on my bicycle. And I remember I never laughed at Ulan Brown again. I can tell you that. And the second thing I remember, and it was, I don't know, a couple of weeks after that maybe, I'm riding down the road on my bike, and I see Ulan's bicycle wreck, papers everywhere. It was a normal occurrence. And for the first time in my life, I stopped. And I helped him get his papers back in the basket so he could get on down the road. I'll tell you, I never forgot Ulan Brown. I thought about Ulan Brown 10,000 times in my life until finally I wrote a book called The Legacy of Ulan Brown. But I didn't know it when I was 11 years old or 12 years old. But there was going to be many times in my life that I was going to find myself in the ditch. And I would always have two choices. Ulan Brown didn't know what the word quit was. He never occurred to him when he wrecked that he was going to be through and just walk away. He was always gathering his papers back up, get them in the basket, and get on down the road. And I realized I would have two choices in life. I could lie in the ditch when I found myself in the ditch and mully grub and complain and blame everybody else for my plight in life, or I could gather my papers back up and get them in the basket and get on down the road. We got two choices. We don't have three choices. We don't have one choice. You got two. You're going to find yourself in the ditch. Sometimes we're in the ditch because we do stupid stuff. You know, you go stick a fork in an electrical outlet, you're going to be in a ditch of electrocution. I mean, that's stupid. You get suffered consequences for what you do. Sometimes we're in the ditch because somebody in our life has done stupid stuff and we're sucked in with them. And sometimes we're in the ditch and nobody's done anything. It's just people get sick. People die. We just find ourselves in the ditch. The question is not if we find ourselves in a ditch. That's not the question. You're going to find yourself in the ditch. The question is, do you make the right ditch choices?
Yeah.
That's the deal. And boy, Ulan's story is a strong one. When Ulan died in 1985, there were 15 people at the most at his funeral. Four of those were me and my people that worked for me. he didn't think his life counted for much. I can tell you that. But I want to tell you, Ulan Brown is famous.
Wow.
And his story, literally, and I've told it thousands of times, I have chill bumps right now telling that story.
Wow.
It is a powerful thing about ditch living and ditch choices.
Yes,
so
sir.
That's how the Ulan Brown book came about, Stu.
And the Ulan Brown Grace is the cover of Bruce Goddard's second book, The Legacy of Ulan Brown. Now, what has been said about Bruce Goddard, he's a fourth-generation funeral director who's been described as a cross between Mark Twain and Max Lucado, and he's speaking all over the world. He's involved now with the company, the largest single provider of funeral and cremation and cemetery services in North America, SCI, former owner of Goddard Funeral Homes in Reynolds and Roberta, Georgia. Man of God, powerful, prolific author, speaker, and he's going to talk with me about basketball, which you're going to hear some cool stuff about that, about his dad, his legacy, some real funny stuff about funerals. This guy put the fun in funerals, if anyone did. He's Bruce Goddard. Stay tuned. More Truth Talk coming up. I want to say a special thank you to a wonderful partner helping us advance the message of this program, of the gospel. And the thank you goes out to MyPillow.com. Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO, has now opened his heart to say thank you as well. He wants to give you the opportunity to do what I've done. I've slept on this pillow. I love MyPillow. I sleep better. What would you give for a good night's sleep? Right now, for the first time, you can get deep discounts on all the MyPillow products. I'm talking about the MyPillows, the mattress toppers, the bed sheets, and the body pillows. All their products right now, all you got to do is go to MyPillow.com and click on the new radio listener specials. MyPillow.com, click on the new radio listener specials, and you'll save big. You won't believe the savings. Just enter promo code TRUTH when you get there. All these products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You can also call this toll-free number, 800-944-5396. Thank you, MyPillow, for partnering with us to advance the good news of the gospel. And thank you to all you guys that have checked them out and supported our sponsors. Is it possible to put the fun in funeral? Is it possible to smile and laugh even in the face of death? Bruce Goddard, I don't know if you could have survived all these years and told all these stories and written all these books, like your book, View from a Hearse, if there wasn't a way to, if the good Lord didn't give us something to hope for and something to smile about even in the face of death. Am I wrong, sir?
That's absolutely a fine line between laughing and crying. And you're from North Carolina. Your famous coach, Jimmy Valvano, boy, his talk taught me that. And when 1993, when he was getting that ESPY award, he was dying. The three things you should do every day is laugh, think, and cry. Hmm. And that's a fine line between laughing and crying. And when you can do those three things, you've had a great day. That is for sure.
Yeah, laughing and crying emotions. Sometimes we get a little bit, inoculated or numb to emotions in our culture. We're not laughing. We're not crying. We see things, and things are such in a blurb, and then social media, and bam, 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 and then we got posts and memes and hate and anger. But living life, and when you're talking to a family, Bruce, it gets real. It'd be right there when they're knocking on death's door, and then you get the phone call. And what's that process like, having been in it for all these years?
I think I've said this to many families over the years. When I go to that house or that hospital, that I say that I'm going to treat your mom or dad or whoever it is just like it was if it was my mom or dad. Hmm. And so you when you know people, in my case, most of the time I knew them well. You don't have to conjure that up. You really are sympathetic and empathetic about what's going on. You put yourself in their shoes. And that's what I've always done. And it's you make connections with people that last forever when you treat people with dignity and respect and kindness during the rough time of their life.
And you have people believe in you in your life, one of whom you talk about a lot was your dad, who even enlisted some of his guys in the funeral home to go rebound for you. And you ended up being maybe not the most athletic, but you could shoot the rock. You could drop the basketball, and you didn't even know if you'd make the team your sophomore year in high school.
That is true. I was a I was starting lineup my 10th grade year in the B team, and I think the leading scorer on that team. But now that's back when integration, and we were becoming a small high school, become a really, really largest classification back then in Georgia's high school, a triple A. And so I was it's going to be a lot harder for me to make the basketball team. So we had a little gym. I went to school in Fort Valley, which is 12 miles away in another county, actually. That's another long story. But we had the grocery store, and I decided that to even make that team, I got to work at it. So I got a key to our little gymnasium, and I went down during the summer before my junior year in high school is when it was. I shot 1,000 times a day, and my dad would send some people that worked at the store down to had several basketballs. You're a basketball player, I think, Stu, so you know how long it takes to shoot 1,000 times. But I had them throwing basketballs back to me, and I shot basketball after basketball after basketball.
Wow.
I shot basketball. I had blisters on my hand. I had a chart in my closet where I kept where I shot those basketballs. And my mama thought I'd lost my mind. So I went to start in my 11th grade year. I made the start lineup on that team, and I was a leading scorer on that team for the next 2 years. And, you know, most of the time I was one of the few white people on the court. And I was playing in a lot better athletes than me, and I couldn't run very fast. I couldn't jump very high, but I could shoot the lights out of a basketball.
Wow.
But I learned a very important lesson, and I think that's where you're going. And, boy, I learned it that I never forgot. When the game was on the line and the coach called timeout and there were 2 seconds on the clock and we were down 1 point, not everybody wanted the ball. Everybody wanted to be on the winning team, but not everybody wanted to risk being the GOAT. And I remember telling the coach, give me the ball. I want the ball. I had shot 1,000 times a day. I was ready to take that shot. It's not like I came out of the stands to take the shot, but I knew that I wanted to take the shot.
Wow.
And I made one of those maybe. You know, it's not like you got a last-second shot a lot, and I missed a couple of them. But what I learned is that I would never learn to win in this life till I learned that it was okay to lose. To win, you got to be willing to lose. And most people live their lives, what have I got to do to get by? And this is the Christian life too. I mean, not just their lives, but even living out their faith. What have I got to do to stay under the radar? What have I got to do to get by? We live defensive lives. And I learned during those high school days that I don't have to live defensive. It's okay to lose. It is okay to lose. You got to win. You got to be willing to lose. So you got to walk out on a limb in life and do things. And if you fall flat on your face, great. But you walked out. But then you get to see God do things that nobody would ever see unless you were willing to step out there and be willing to lose. God works that way. He don't want us in our comfort zone. When we get out of our comfort zone, and he shows us who he is. And so most people never experience that. In my opinion,
that's powerful, and also powerful. You met a whole new family you didn't have when you all of a sudden you're surrounded by some amazing, talented African American guys that are ballers, and you're like, wow, these guys are awesome. Where have you been all my life? And like, you know, we realize that we're all one. We're all the same. We're all the same family in God, right?
Absolutely. I'm friends with many of those guys today. One of them played football for the Cincinnati Bengals, and yeah, it's true. I mean, absolutely true.
Hey, you write
Absolutely
a letter
true.
Or two.
We're all one people.
You write a letter or two to your dad in here that just about tore me up. Talk real quick as we wrap up about your pops and the impact he had on your life and just how he encouraged. He was that man of God, encouraged you. So many people don't have dads. We need a mentor. My dad's big into mentoring. He's trying to mentor these young kids that don't have dads. What would you challenge everyone about the importance of being a godly father? Your son Luke is an example of that, a younger man who's a godly father, really loving his kids, pouring into his kids, spending time with his kids, not chasing the career over his family. What's your challenge going out of here about biblical fatherhood? How that you're everything you are, you know, you give such tribute to your dad who built you and pointed you to Christ.
Yeah, and the truth is, it's my dad and my mom, but dad was you know, he was not one of those people that would teach me by standing up on, let me tell you some things you need to know. I mean, we did that some. but most of it was by example, which is, by the way, the absolutely best teacher. And he taught me by example. And I mean, number one, he taught me how to make a living. And he gave me rope. I remember waiting on a family in the funeral home. And I mean, sitting in with him, first he said, you sit in here, listen to what I do. I was 13 years old. Then he said, you write it down. I'm going to do the talking. And finally he said, I'm going to sit in here and you do the talking. And finally he left, but he would always correct me if I did something wrong, but never in front of those families. He would make me look like a king. He said, this guy is wonderful. He's gifted. You got, then I go out. He said, son, let me tell you, don't ever put your hands in your pockets when your family's walking in the door. Little things, but he would praise me in front of other people, but he would correct me privately when I needed to be corrected to make me better. And so all of that, he taught me by example. I mean, he was a man of integrity. I got a wonderful story. You're talking about an African-American situation back in the early 60s in South Georgia. We might not have time for it. And I don't, it's probably not in the book. It may be, but he taught me by example.
Tell us the story when we come back. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back more with Bruce Goddard. The book, View from a Hearse, Lighten Up, and his sequel to that, The Legacy of Ewan Brown, a Christian undertaker who's loaded with stories. He's going to tell us this serious, powerful story that happened a ways back, but then he's going to tell us one of the funniest funeral stories, if that's even possible, that you have ever heard. I promise you, you'll want to stay tuned for this and also download the podcast. There's two parts to this. If you haven't heard the first one, get it, the Truth Talk podcast, and be sure you tune in the second one as well. That's going to be coming out soon. Stay tuned. More on Truth Talk with Stu Epperson, our special guest, author, speaker, and undertaker, Bruce Goddard, when we come back. Who's your Barnabas? And who are you a Barnabas to?
True Commentary with Stu Epperson, author of the book, First Words of Jesus.
The last time Paul was in Jerusalem, he was Saul, and he was knocking on doors, going door to door, taking Christians to prison and killing them. He comes back a changed man. Saul turns into Paul, and he knocked on doors again to join the Christians as a new believer, but every door slammed except for one, Barnabas. Barnabas believed in Paul when no one else did, and Barnabas discipled him and took him in. Everything changed from that moment on in the Apostle Paul. Who is your Barnabas that believes in you, and who are you being a Barnabas to? Who are you believing in, encouraging, pushing closer to grow in Jesus? Just give one word of encouragement to someone today and be a Barnabas.
True Commentary with Stu Epperson, author of the book, First Words of Jesus. Available now in bookstores or go online to firstwordsofjesus.com.
Have you ever ridden in a hearse? Well, maybe not in the back of one yet. If you're listening to us now, you're still upright, but have you driven one? Have you been an undertaker? Our guest is a man of God, loves Jesus. He's got kids. He's got grandkids. He is an author. He's a prolific speaker. And he's written some books, the first of which is called A View from a Hearse, subtitle Lighten Up. He's Bruce Goddard. Bruce, coming out of our last segment, you were about to tell another story. And I love your stories. I could listen to them all day long. And I think it's refreshing. The Bible says, you know, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. And also, you know, these reminders of, you know, on a humorous side, but on a serious side, reminders, pinnacles in your life that have pointed you back to God, that point our listeners back to God, whether it's people, relationships, whether it's circumstances, tough times. You've had to deal with some of the toughest stuff, with death and mourning and bereavement and dying. But you've also had some phenomenal things happen to you in your life, and we're thankful to you for sharing these with us, not just on this broadcast on Truth Talk, but in your awesome books and when you speak all over the place. But go back to where we picked off last, will you, and talk a little bit about the story you were talking, you know, just that happened some time ago.
So you were asking me, and I was talking about my dad, and I was saying that he taught me by example. He was not one of those that gave me a lot of speeches. He would certainly correct me, but he was not somebody to say, four things you need to do. I just watched him, and he was very personal and open and corrected me, praised me in public. But I watched some of the things he did, and one of the things, it happened when I was very young, but I never forgot it. He never mentioned it to me until I mentioned it to him late in life. But we ran a grocery business, and the funeral home was behind the meat market at the store. Unique deal. We sold everything from Evan Rude Motors to Hook Cheese, basically, is what the motto was. But we had a guy that worked for us. His name was Hanson. And Hanson began working for us. He was born in 1900. And my family business started in 1866. Mm. And Hanson probably started working there in 1918. So he was worked there forever, but he was an African-American guy. And he was like part of our family, but he worked. He worked. He was like an employee of the store and did everything. He dug wells. He helped in the embalming room. He did everything you could do. One Saturday afternoon, and this, you got to understand, this is early 60s in a South Georgia town. This obviously intoxicated guy, and I started to say the word redneck, and that's probably more accurate, but I'll say guy. But he came in, and he was calling Hanson the N-word, and he was cursing and vulgar language, and I was I was a kid, but Daddy saw that, and he was watching him, and I don't know what happened, but, you know, Hanson, again, this is the 60s in Reynolds, Georgia, and Hanson backed up, and Daddy went over and said, what are you doing? And all of a sudden, Daddy was a big man. He was 6'4". He was a boxer in college. He could whoop a bear, but he grabbed that man by the collar. And he walked him out to the door. And this guy was intoxicated. But Daddy literally pushed him out of the door. Before he did that, he said, don't ever step your foot in this store again. Mm. And I'll never forget it. And so I knew the story, not that I was impacted by it later, but Hanson used to tell the story. Hanson ended up working for me. He didn't die in 1985 or something. And
wow.
Hanson told me that story many times. He said, I'll never forget as long as your dad stood up for me. I've noticed that throughout his life. When I was in college and I was in a fraternity and I was telling a funny story where we were making fun of some guy that wanted to pledge and we were going to offer him a pen and somebody gave him a writing pen. And I was laughing. I said, that guy's funny. And Daddy didn't think he was funny a bit. You know, you don't ever make fun of people. You protect the oppressed. Mm. You don't pile on people. Period. But anyway,
That's a story.
Yeah.
And you lost some business. That family never darkened the door of your store again. And they never spent money with you again. But you did the right thing, which is a theme in your books of honoring God and doing right, even if it hurts, huh?
I remember Daddy telling me, was a member of that family, generations, and people didn't even know the story. They just knew they didn't do business with us. It got passed down. And Daddy asked me, why didn't we get that funeral? I said, Daddy, you remember the time you told the man that would come back in the store? And he said, yep. He said, I do. That's that family. And he said, well, you know, Bruce, all business is not good business.
That is something else.
So, yeah.
Well, that's another one of his many stories. You got to read this book, The View from a Hearse. He is Bruce Goddard. Now, we're going to ask Bruce, we're going to get you to go on one final limb. He's talked all about loving Jesus. Be sure you download our first podcast interview. It's just tremendous, telling stories, how he came to know the Lord, his testimonies in there. I want you to tell us a funny story now, Bruce. What's one of the real funnies related to funerals and the death you're able to, in for all these years, four or five generations of Goddard funeral service and different iterations, different locations, different companies, but it all kind of got started there in Reynolds, Georgia. Your book, View from a Hearse, Lighten Up, and your next book after that, Legacy of Ulan Brown. But give us one more story as we get out of here that'll give us some perspective, but also something that really will tickle our spine bone on all the stuff you've seen over these years.
Well, it's according to how old you are. Well, you'll appreciate some of these stories. Some people, younger people, don't understand how the funeral business was. But my granddaddy was 97 years old when he passed away. And up until just about to when he died, he was still helping me on funerals. Mm. And I called him Big Daddy. That's what I called him, Big Daddy. And he was a funeral business. He was a second generation, and I was a fourth generation. But you know, saw him all the time. And we had this funeral out in this rural cemetery. And I would always give Big Daddy a job to do. And he, this day, the family decided they wanted to open the casket at the grave, which is after the service or before the service, which we didn't like to do as a funeral director. You don't want to open caskets outside. You can't control the lighting and all that stuff, but you do whatever the family wants. So anyway, I said, this was a very sandy cemetery, and I was afraid that when people came up to view their loved one or their friend, the grave was going to cave in. This grave caved all the time. It was very hard to open and close a grave at that cemetery. So Big Daddy's job, I gave him, I said, Big Daddy, if you will, you stand here and keep people from getting too close to the grave, because I'm afraid somebody's going to fall in. So he was all over it. You just have to know him. He was saying, gentlemen, you're too close. Back up, madam, back up a little bit. You're too close. He was all over it. And everybody knew him, and it was funny, you know, watching him. I mean, people would come up and, you know, madam, you're getting too close. Gentlemen, back up. So you just have to know he was a pro. But if 97 years old, he had his cane, he was bent over. You just have to picture him in the sandy cemetery. So we finally, you know, got it done. He was all over. He completed his job for sure. And we started the funeral, and Big Daddy was standing at the head of the grave down there with his cane and had his head kind of bowed in a dignified way. And I looked up, and all of a sudden I noticed that grave started caving. And Big Daddy slowly went down in that grave. I mean, the preacher had just started, and I knew that I had been paid to bury somebody's loved one, but I had to get my granddaddy out of the grave. So we had to stop the funeral. The preacher helped us, some of the family, and to get a 97-year-old man, we were all caving in, trying to get him out. And you can just imagine what was going on.
Wow.
And you pulled his arms off to get him out.
Wow.
And we finally get him up, and he dusts himself off. We dust him off. The preacher gets ready to talk, and he's standing on his cane, and he looked up and said, everything in the grave looks fine. like he had done it on purpose.
I love it. Hey, what's your
smooth undertaker, isn't it?
Smooth undertaker. You are such a blessing. My new hero, Bruce Goddard, he's written some books. Check him out. Check him out online. He's on Facebook, brucegoddard.com, I believe is the website. There's some really cool videos. Goodness gracious, the girl he gave a tip to in a taxi, that a story of honesty and it's just a story of blessing, the stories about the resurrection. He talked about all these things. Go check all that out. Bruce, your final word to people. We're all going to face death. We started this entire conversation, you know, from the very first episode before you came back for more. We just couldn't get enough from you. And we talked about, you know, the inevitabilities of life. We're all going to face death. And that we have great hope in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. If you don't know him, if you can't smile on the inside and the outside because you've never met Christ, I know it's Bruce's passion and ours here at Truth Talk that you know the Lord, that you seek the Lord, that you call upon the name of the Lord to be saved, that you admit you're a sinner and invite Jesus to save you. You can't save yourself. Your good deeds are going to take you right to hell. The Bible says it's not by works of righteousness that we've done, but according to his mercy and what he did for us, not what we've done for him. You're going to hear that message from Bruce, but you're going to hear some awesome other messages as you read. There's so much scripture in Bruce Goddard's books and in his speaking. But Bruce, what's your final take home to everyone out there, including myself, as we look past this life, which is just a blip? I mean, did you ever think, you know, when you started speaking, you know, decades ago, and you were raising a family and you're at the, you know, all this stuff, did you ever think that you'd be on a national talk show talking about all these things, looking back? And I think you got a lot more windshield left than rearview mirror, brother. God's using you in a mighty way. But what's your perspective for everyone listening real quick?
My perspective is this, and it's straight from the Word of God. For a little while, you may suffer grief and all kinds of trials. These come so that your faith, which has greater worth than gold, may be proved genuine, resulting in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you've not seen him, you love him, and maybe you don't see him now. You're filled with a glorious and inexpressible joy, for you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your soul. That's the message. I didn't read that I said it. It is the message where God is raising us up using humor, using trouble, using whatever life to whatever comes to us in life, to bring us to Him. So that's the message, my friend. Thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
And that is a view from a hearse with Bruce Goddard. God bless you, man. Everyone look him up at the Bruce Goddard website, brucegoddard.com. Thanks for listening to Truth Talk. Download the podcast, all kinds of extra stuff on there. And be encouraged and go share the good news of Jesus while with someone who is still living before it's too late. While you have life and breath in your lungs, tell someone about a God that loves them so much, He sent a Savior to die on the cross and come out of the grave to give us new life.